Taurus, and welcome to Taurus Studio for 2024-2025. Your neighborhood astrologer, Eric Francis, here in a midnight session. I think the first ever astrology studio to happen in the wee dark hours of the morning. Let's see how I do. I'm not totally convinced I can carry this off, but it has been a absolutely tremendous week, and if the speed of events in the world is any indication of the speed of events in your life, there is a lot going on, and so I thought I would give this a try now rather than waiting till the morning. Thank you for your patience getting this reading to you. I genuinely appreciate being able to do this work at a time when it fits in time, but also when I'm feeling psychologically and emotionally prepared. And so that's kind of like two roulette wheels moving at once there. And so we may be in the zone now. Capricorn is rising at this time. The moon is newly in Aries at this moment, working at right around midnight on the 4th, overnight into the 5th. So I've cast Taurary, and but mainly I'm going to work with the Taurus new moon chart, and then the May 13th Sun conjunct Uranus chart. I call this reading Taurus Ocean. And my inspiration for that was that that Neptune is about to leave Pisces, and Jupiter is in very nice harmony about to leave your sign. So there's going to be a contact point between Jupiter and Neptune that looks, it's a little hard to see in these charts, but let's see if I can find one that does it. And I never know anyone's level of astrological proficiency, so I have to work kind of in an in-between zone where I explain enough, but I don't over-explain. In case you're not proficient at all in the language, and for those who don't get all the seeming jargon, none of it's jargon. Everything that I'm describing is some form of an energy or color of experience that is fully relatable in Earth terms. But I'm looking at it in this circular language, which is special because it's a language where every letter in the alphabet relates to every other letter. Whereas when you're reading left to right, you just read. You're leaving thousands of things behind. But with astrology, you're pretty much staying in the same place. But these lines, you could call each of these lines a kind of a read of its own. You go, you read that, and then you read that. This is a reverse. It's not easy. It's because it's flipped from normal mirror image. But each time a line appears, that is a kind of a read. That is an astrological statement. Then you start to synthesize all of them. The Taurus ocean part comes from, it's a little, I'm sure, abstract, from this line. Neptune, right at the end of Pisces, and then Jupiter right at the end of Taurus, and then Venus is going to line right up, and they all line up right at 29 and change quite soon after this. And the Sun's already in Gemini, but it does not matter. However, let's let's talk theme here. Actually, we could call this reading Taurus Fire. And I will try to keep looking up and not down to the page. My eyes always want to go down to the page. Why Taurus Fire? Well, there's a lot in Aries. There's a lot in Aries, the sign before yours. So let me stop talking about charts and talk about what they mean, what they're saying. And one of the distinct qualities of Taurus, one of the things that makes Taurus what it is that the sign right before yours is Aries. And in the decades that I've been working in this technique that is not that accepted by the mainstream astrological profession, which is solar houses, no birth time, no birthplace, no birth date even. We just know that either your sun is in Taurus or your rising sign is in Taurus. And that, to most astrologers, this seems like guesswork, but it's not guesswork. There's a lot to read. Whether you relate to it is another question. But the thing that makes Taurus what it is, in my view, is that Aries is the sign right before yours. And this is the feeling of that deep internal burning within. And right now there's a lot of planets working their way through Aries. We've just experienced the total solar eclipse in Aries on 4/8. And that was concurrent with a Mercury retrograde in Aries. And now Mars is in Aries. And the inherent contradiction of this, and that's the thing that makes Taurus pop as a distinct entity, is that Aries is the sign of self-expression, and where it lands in the chart is where you seek and find and explore and strive to define yourself. And all of the different solar charts, all 12 of the solar charts. But with Taurus, it is in what's called the 12th place. The 12th place, the one right before anything. If you're Pisces, your 12th place is Aquarius. If you're Taurus, your 12th place is Aries. It's the sign immediately before. Everything is in whole sign houses in this system. So the whole sign is the house. And with Aries, the sign of self and of being and of self-actualization and of self-expression and self-discovery and self-everything else, to be located in the 12th house is kind of like having a game of hide and seek with yourself, where the thing you're looking for is the thing that is the most immediately proximate to you, but it's in a kind of a blind spot. Now, we're all familiar with the concept of a blind spot in a car, where you can be looking in your rear view mirror, in your side view mirror, and there's a vehicle almost lined up with your car, but maybe it's set back about 5 or 6 feet, and you can't see it in the mirror. That's why it's so important to turn your head and check. And we've all made that mistake of not turning our head and checking, and there's somebody right in the blind spot, and the thing that prevents the accident is they honk their horn and you get back in your lane. And so for Taurus, it's almost always necessary to be checking your blind spot. Now, this is a condition that's true of the human race, but the beauty of Taurus and this thing that's kind of archetypally human about Taurus is that the blind spot that so many people experience, this game of hide and seek with the self and of hide and seek with the soul and of the thing you're looking for is right there, but you can't find it, expresses perfectly in Taurus, because the first sign, the sign of I am, is in the 12th place, the place of where am I? And so there is this statement and there is this question, and the two can have a way of neutralizing each other, which can make the entire quest for being invisible or seem like it's not even there. The 12th is also the house of what's gone missing. And when you're looking at a proper natal chart, you know, a timed natal chart or chart that you rectify that you trust, items in the 12th place are the people and events and experiences that are missing. So people with the moon in the 12th can have a sense of a missing mother. People with the sun in the 12th can have a sense of a missing father. If Venus is in your 12th, it might be a sense of missing femininity. If Mars is in the 12th, a sense of missing masculinity. Mercury might be a sign of a missing voice in the 12th, but it's not gone. You just have to orient yourself and look for it in a certain way. And there's no person on this earth who's meekly conscious, who's not involved in some kind of a journey of trying to find who they are in some way. And for some people, the quest is pushed away. It can be pushed away by meds, by drugs, by alcohol, by various forms of distraction, or compulsive behavior that distract from the primary quest for self and self-understanding. But apart from that, and I think even in those situations, there is this question of who am I, where am I, and what am I doing here? So hopefully I'm describing enough of these properties of the 12, these questioning properties, and what it might feel like to have this sign that for most people they express it boldly in some other part of the chart. So for example, a Pisces has Aries in the second. And that describes a quest for values and a natural motivation around making money, because that's the nature of the second. But when we take that bold, initiatory, assertive quality of Aries and put it in the 12th house, well, that creates this almost vacuous mystery. And that is a potentially very productive and very creative tension, because the thing missing in this whole incarnational game that we're playing actually might feel like it's missing for you because it's in your 12th house. And there are ways to access the 12th. They can be through the planets in the 12th. They can be through the houses that the ruler of the 12th rules. For example, if you have Aries in the 12th, where's your Mars? But in the case of your current chart, your current solar chart, there is so much in Aries that the only way to recover the true sense of this quest is to really commit to it in a fully conscious way and to pursue this quest deeply and to keep reminding yourself to come back to it, because that's part of the property of the disappearance. It's gone, and then you forget what you're not immediately aware of. To give another example for Scorpio, they have Aries in the sixth house. Everyone has to get up and go to work every day to some extent. Everyone has to get involved in activity. Everyone has to take care of themselves in some way. So that's easily accessed. But with Aries, the side of self-expression, questing, development in the 12th, there can be a mystery that you don't know is there, but what you may have is a sense that the mystery is there, and you don't know what that sense is telling you. And what that sense is telling you is to do this distinctly and exclusively spiritual thing, which is to understand that the only way to find yourself is by turning your sound, your hearing, and your vision inwardly and seek inwardly. Now, A Course in Miracles is quite expressive about what it calls the fear to look within. And so with the 12th, that is always That's always a thing. And there are many ways to access that interior space, and they can include what you learn in dreams. That's a very important way to access the 12th. They can learn what you, they can be accessible through experiences that people have, like doing ayahuasca ceremony, though I am a little bit skeptical of that. Art is a very good way to express the 12th, because you're tapping through genuine art, you're tapping the unconscious. You're bringing something out that only initially exists within yourself, and then you're putting it out into the world. And yet, Aries is so oriented on action and initiative. And my sense is that much of this powerful charisma, this unbelievably appealing quality that Taurus has that you may not be aware of, but it's a thing, is created by this inner polarity of this powerful self-expression in a blind spot. And the result of this can be a lot of hesitation, a lot of delay. It can be delay. Let's take that as one idea. Or if you tap in and you learn to access yourself within your 12th place, where you need to find yourself, because that's what Aries is for all the signs, the result can be an expressive journey that is so enduring, it changes the world, and the results and the work product based on exploring this inner tension and polarity can create enduring works, enduring love, and a profoundly meaningful lifetime. The nature of Aries right now is that it is populated by some quick movers, but two slow movers who are in for quite a long duration. One is Chiron, about 9 years in Aries. The other is Eris, about 130 years. And they are both in Aries in year 12. Now, that argues for something accessible and available, because there's a lot of energy there. And then at the same time, it can take very deep questions and conceal them. And the trick to this, if there is one, is knowing when you encounter one of these questions, knowing when you've actually got something that you can work with. Because and it's almost like a graduated level of building self-awareness to the point where you can actually acknowledge that there's something to ask yourself here. And one of the properties of the 12th is that it has a way of bobbing up and then disappearing. So let's take the example of a dream. But in an alarm clock scenario, I can't use those things. But let's imagine an alarm clock scenario where, you know, the alarm goes off, you're dreaming, and like, whoa, there's this whole other world. You bump the snooze, you go back into the dream, and it makes an impression on you. You wake up, maybe the alarm goes off, maybe you don't, maybe you just turn it off before it goes off again. And in the current mythology, your prefrontal lobe suppresses that. You know that there was something there. And then through the day, pieces of this dream can float up to consciousness. You may look down and see an object like a green pencil, and it reminds you that there was something green in the dream. Ah, and it the symbol and the image and the color float to surface through your consciousness with a sensation. And then they go back down again. And then half an hour later, you see another object, a bowl. And it reminds you of a bowl in the stream. And the feeling comes back. I think you get the idea. And then it goes away, and then it's difficult to find. But with the placement of these, with Aries and these planets in Aries, the Aries itself and the planets there that are moving and trying to do so much and teach you so much, they are the things that they're teaching you and the discoveries that you're making about yourself and the things that your unconscious is teaching you about who you are can be those things that float up and then they're there for a second and then they're gone. And then you remember it. Ah, wow, there it is. And then it's gone. And it's like, once it's gone, it's gone. You don't remember it till it surfaces up again. And so this game of hide and seek with yourself is something that you will play until you learn how to master it. And the way that you will probably learn, and you may be on your way to doing this, I don't exactly know who I'm talking to, right? I'm talking to a set of teachings that come to me through the chart, but not the specifics of your life. The method that you use to keep remembering, to stay in contact with this unconscious information about yourself that bubbles up to the top and bursts into the conscious atmosphere and then it evaporates, that becomes your art. And the art becomes a process of remembering. And anything that you do that is part of your process of remembering, that is in some way expressive, is your art. And the art is not the result. The art is the fact of remembering, and the expression is the result of remembering, but the actual thing itself is the remembering. And it's almost like the painting or the poem or the music or the whatever it might be. Decorating can be a visionary art because you have this feeling within yourself and you create this room that reflects that feeling. That too is your art. And I think that perhaps for all the signs, the dedication to a process of remembering and expressing and remembering and expressing is the most urgently needed for Taurus. And it is potentially for this reason that I think that the work of the creative work of Taurus artists is some of the most enduring of all. Many of the great artists that have shaped and molded my life have been and continue to be Tauruses. And the people who have shaped and molded my life and to whom I have had, you know, tremendously admiring relationships have also been Tauruses. So I think I'm seeing a real thing here. I'm hearing a real thing when I hear their music, and then I look at the way that their work has kind of created a point of orientation for many things around it. That's the result of this expression of needing to remember, remembering, losing it, finding it, and then you learn finally how to catch that fire and put it in a tangible form. And that is what is coming to a peak now. It's coming to a peak now because we've just had this huge eclipse that's created this internal opening. And Mercury has done this crazy retrograde through all this territory of the eclipse. And Mars is now there. And Mars is going to touch all of these important points of contact, each one of them saying, Mars conjunct the North Node. Ah, that's a point of awakening. Catch that fire. Mars conjunct Chiron, a point of healing and awakening. Get that idea. Thread the needle of that. Mars conjunct the eclipse point, that right before Chiron. Chiron's moved a couple of degrees. Another point of awakening. Mars conjunct Eris, another point of awakening. And the big one, starting in 2025, which you are working your way into, is this. Let me just see if I can find a chart that doesn't have so much written on it, so it's a little bit easier. Is that as I've this will work. This chart for June 2nd will work. And I'm going to cover up the slow mover, the quick movers, and I'm just going to leave the slow movers visible. How do we do this? Let's get some the right amount of light on the subject here. Move this thing out of the way. This is Eris. It is moving very slowly, 130 years. This is Chiron. It is moving slowly, but not as slowly. And you can see they're only 3 degrees away. That means that these two will form one of the most important conjunctions of them all, I believe, in the spring of 2025. And that is very close now. And so what Chiron conjunct Eris is that is like the big awakening call of them all for everyone. But for you, it is this next stage of an inner dimension opening. Now, 2024 so far has not been too shabby with this total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron kind of photographing that into your awareness, branding that. Well, that's one way to look at it, or actually creating a psychic opening within yourself through which other things can flood. Now, if all of this is like going on completely below the boards and is not able to come up and find expression, you are probably in a very tense space. To the extent that you're able to bring forth these quests and questions and feelings and sensations and discoveries, then you are likely to be feeling a sense of potential and of power and productivity and the connection of those things. Not just power like I've got a big ego, but power in the sense that you have a tool or a thought form or a need, a mission, a question you're trying to answer that actually give you focus and keep pulling you back into your inner awareness. So it is therefore important to cultivate that this sense of inner awareness. I'm hoping that your mind is filling in the points that I can't say, and that everyone has their own internal language of how they communicate with themselves. And even if I'm not matching your internal language, hopefully the prompts are close enough to like say, for me that translates into that. But again, to go back to the dream metaphor, you know, if an individual single dream, one you have one day, the way that frequently often pieces of the dream float up and disappear and go away, think of that as a metaphor for your whole process of inner orientation and self-actualization. Okay, now, that's the sign before yours. The sign Taurus itself is in this quite a rarefied state. We just experienced. Let's see if I can. Get this to be manageable in some way. Maybe it would help if I turn down the light a little bit. All right, that helps a little bit. Let's see what we can do here. So this is the chart. Microphone, please. This is the chart for the Taurus new moon. That's coming up on the 7th. I'm working on the 5th, by the way, on Beltane with the sun at the cross quarter, which partly inspired me to do this now. And there is Jupiter at 25 Taurus, moving fairly quickly. It orbits in 12 years. Here's Uranus at 22 and change. Sorry, 22 and change. That's 23. That's 26. They've just formed this conjunction on April 20th, the day that the sun entered your sign. They're still in conjunction now. And this is the part of your awareness that is right in front of you. It represents certain developments, certain personality emergences that you've had, perhaps important ways that you have changed your appearance, or that you feel that your appearance is changing, rearranging your the way that you describe yourself, and in some ways, an actual fundamental redefinition of yourself. And yet, in a way, there are elements of that that are a distraction because they're far enough outside yourself or descriptive or reflexive in a way that they can, or connected to activity, for example, that they can mask over the whole inner dimension that I've been talking about for the first half hour of this reading. Okay. And all the signs relate to all the signs. And if I haven't made that clear already, I think that there's I could write a book about the placement of Aries in each of the signs, just writing about that. Or it could be a fantastic article, but it would be pretty long. It would be like a 10,000 word article. However, the cool thing is that with all of this activity in Aries, and we're going to get to Pisces in a second, but with all this activity in Aries informing you from within, and then all this activity in Taurus, what is actually ideal is to connect that inner and the outer. And so you're in a tremendous position to be able to do that, and to connect, in a sense, the waking world with the dream world, the unconscious world with the conscious world, and to become quite an incredible synthesizer of your own experience. In some way, this will be happening, whether you're aware of it or not, you want it or not, whether you're conscious of it or not. But it's so beautiful. There's so much there. There's so much richness and so much to experience that really you want to get any psychic obstructions out of the way and feel this thing going on and get yourself to the point where you simply have to do something genuinely, not only introspective, not merely something like meditation, but introspective that you then express as a kind of a result. And the art is the fusion of those two things that is not there to create a work product. It is there to keep your beauty and your brilliance and your vital force alive, to remain connected to yourself at all times, to never forget the memory of God, the memory of your inner instructions. There are many ways the psyche plays hide and seek with itself. And any book that's dedicated to any spiritual topic that you might read is in some way going to address this game of hide and seek. And they all have different names for it, and you could go on and on and lecturing about it for weeks and months and years. Or do psychoanalysis and lay on the couch 4 days a week for 10 years, right? And that's like a really insidious way to play this game where somebody supposedly knows more than you, or you can just connect with yourself, and it is almost inevitable with this kind of thing going on, even without it in previous times, just the signs themselves create this this tension, that you simply have to respond to yourself at all times and learn from the response and bring it back in and keep going. Now let's spread out a little bit here, and use the diagram as a kind of a map. And let's see, you know, I wish I could just impart astrological knowledge to people so that it would be easier to sorry for looking down. Okay. Inside this region here, this is the Aries Taurus zone. This is the conscious unconscious bobbing up, bobbing down, self-creating, remembering what you created, dreaming, remembering what you dreamed. And outside of that are two mutable signs. Pisces, that's the 11th place for you. And Gemini, that's the second place for you. Okay, so let's hold that thought for a second. And notice that there's activity here. Sedna has arrived in the second place already. There's a centaur, I forget the name of it, that entered with Sedna. And then in the 11th place, a kind of an open zone in the chart, is Saturn, a centaur, an intense planet. They're not asteroids. And then there's Neptune in the very edge of the 11th house. And so we spread out into these two additional houses. And what these houses really pertain to values and how you relate to values and how you express your values. And what they are both doing is calling on you in a whole different way than the Taurus-Aries tension to unify your consciousness and remember that you are one being united with yourself and whatever you feel to be your creator or your source. And the challenge of having mutable signs in these two places that are very closely associated with values and the way that you express them is that mutable signs are very dualistic, and it can have this sense of there being two of you in the public realm, two of you in the private realm of the second, the public realm of the 11th. And then there too is this orbital process, it's less about going inward to retrieve and to express and then learn from that and bring it back out again, and more about observing the way that you make your decisions, observing the way that you act socially, and monitoring your consistency. One of the things that all this tension does is it can create a personality that is tremendously concerned with appearance. And I have often joked, you will never see a Taurus go out of the house not looking good. You don't want to ever go out looking a little frumpy, or you're not one of these kids who wears your pajamas and slippers to school. You probably laugh at this. Really, you're wearing slippers walking down the street. Please. That is not you. However, there's another point of tension between the appearance and the reality. And so one of the ways to work with this dynamic is to keep your moment-to-moment expression as close as possible to your inner state as possible. This is a very important therapy exercise to kind of cut all the strings that you can use to consciously shape your face, for example, and not be able to hide your feelings behind a face that is there in some way to mask them. And this is a way of allowing or inducing a kind of vulnerability that may be too much for certain people, because you might feel very naked and exposed, as if everyone knows what you're thinking and they're able to just read you and see right through you. But I promise you, it's actually not. It's not that different than having your face kind of controlled in a mask-like fashion, where you control your facial expression, and it doesn't necessarily match your interior reality. The allowing yourself to match is more going to create an inner dynamic than an outer dynamic. You will still be fairly inscrutable to most people. So what I'm saying is, don't worry, they can't read your mind. If you're matching your interior feelings to your exterior expression. And I think what you may find is that you will tap into a mutability factor, which gives you a way to adapt very quickly to your circumstances and to your environment, because you're allowing an adaptability in where you're more free from moment to moment to be who you are and feel who you are and feel what you feel. And this is this facilitates an immediacy and a situational awareness that is very, very helpful in a world where everything is changing so fast and where it feels so easy to get left behind. If you're in a constant process of updating your reality at all times by always being where you are and feeling how you feel and expressing when you have the opportunity to express what is really true for you, that saves time, because you're not having to keep catching back up with yourself when things are moving very quickly. Okay, one last point on this all, and then everything keeps coming back to the 12. So let's skip the one last point, and let's now make a new point. And conveniently, in this chart for May 13th, where the freshness of this chart is really wonderful. And that freshness is seen in the conjunction of the Sun at 2306 and Uranus at 2306. And this, it's not the last time. I don't think it's the last time. I don't have an astrology computer down here, but I don't think it's the last time there's going to be a Sun conjunction to Uranus in Taurus, but it's probably the next to the last time. And this is a moment to do a lot of catching up with yourself very fast, to have a set of changes and adaptations that you want to make, and then just make them all together all at once. And you may not get 100%, but you may very well get to 70 or 80, 90%. You'll get a majority. And so what I'm suggesting here is, this is a great opportunity, this chart being set for an event that takes place on the 13th of May, not in about a week. where there's going to be even more of this sense of celestial speed up and acceleration that are almost too much to handle right now. By the way, one of the ways I am currently able to keep up and move as fast as society is moving and to keep up with the impressive workload that I have and still keep everything beautiful is I am not doing mind-altering substances of any sticky kind like alcohol or cannabis. And this, and a lot of people rely on these things as some form of relief. I mean, for me, cannabis is a way to kind of slip into an alternate reality. But the problem is that it's a bit sticky, and it depends on the nature of your psyche. But it is the resinous substance is sticky. The body clears alcohol and some other substances much faster, but cannabis tends to stick around. And one of the concerns I have about a world where now cannabis is becoming ubiquitous and a lot of people just have their vape in their palm is that it is potentially creating a dangerous dynamic with digital conditions and enhancing the sense that the virtual is real. Now, while we're on that subject, this is another very important 12th house matter that is associated with Aries, and Aries in the 12th, and the digital realm is like this enormous 12th house that we're all swimming around in, is the urgency of expression is to keep yourself regrounding in physicality, despite the fact that the digital realm and its kind of very close companion, cannabis, which makes it all seem real, or realer than it is. Let me finish that thought. The idea here is to remain in a state of ongoing manifestation, which is likely to feel very unpassive in a way that you would probably rather not do. It's nice to just ease back and let things happen, to go with the flow, to let your understanding of yourself come as it will. But the fact of the digital is calling for, and particularly the digital combined with cannabis, but either way, a constant updating of your files and a constant sense of a reality check and a constant sense of, am I looking at a projection or am I looking at something that I can see objectively in the world? And it's very difficult to verify that, because if you're looking at a projection, you're looking at something that's coming from inside you, and someone else is unlikely to be able to see it. And if you're looking at something that is objective in the world, you're still looking through your perception set, which another person is very unlikely to see. Nonetheless, you can and probably have developed what some call reality checks. And it's as with, it's kind of the same story coming up over and over again in your chart here, is that these reality checks become very important in the environment that you're in. The situational awareness, the reality checks, the constant verification of what is really happening versus what is happening in your imagination. I'll give one last example. Where's the chart with Taurus rising? So to say that we're reading for Taurus means we put Taurus in the first place in the ascendant. And that means that we have Scorpio in the seventh place. And notably, the ruler of your opposite sign, Scorpio, which hints at relationships and largely about your environment, is Mars, which also rules Aries. But the ruler of your seventh, your relationship house, is tucked back into this hidden zone. And so what this is doing is describing in a very bold way, though I think this is always true, your relationship with others being a direct expression of your relationship to yourself, and how you relate to the idea of the other inwardly, how you relate to the idea of yourself inwardly, and then this determines the your method and your approach of sharing experiences with others. And there, you know, there's one reading of this chart that says that that it could be a potentially very isolated or isolating or difficult time, because there is so much tucked within the 12th house. Like, you've got all like major stuff with Mercury still in there, and at the moment, where is Venus gone? You've got Venus with you. That's Venus is tracking you through your first house. So, but then to take the ruler of your relationship house and put that into your 12th can have the sense of relationship missing. But what the relationship missing point is also reinterpreted as saying that you relate to others through your relationship to yourself, that how you treat yourself has a lot, everything to do with being determinative of how you treat others. And that ultimately your inner experience is what determines your outer experience. And this, of course, is a very challenging thing to learn in a world where almost everything seems like outer experience, and in a time when everything seems like outer experience because digital constantly pulls us out of ourselves. And yet, the grand conspiracy of your chart is to draw you back into a form of self-awareness that is not solipsistic, it is not egotistical, it is not narcissistic, it is not all of these things that don't allow for the existence of the other, but rather it's reminding you that your processing experience, your way of processing your reality is the immediately single most important thing that allows you to relate to other people. So the closer you stay to yourself, the more natural it will seem to stay close to others. Because your central mooring is your internal reality. I was going to say, all right, that's good, which we could say. But there's one thing that I have to mention. And by the way, the somewhere in between readings, which are more than an hour of video and a massive book chapter length, but very nicely paced reading, will, if this leaves you with more stuff you want to pursue, you're likely to find it in one of those places. And whether you're doing astrology like by hand personally, by hand in my mind, or whether you're working with the work of a teacher and then perhaps a very one teaching abundantly as I am. I just need to get my eyes into a little darker place. The screen doesn't look bad, though. There's a lot of assembling that you do. So it's not this pat thing where you say, that's going to happen that way, that's going to happen that way, that's going to happen then. That is not doing astrology. There's always this process of assembling. You have to do a lot of the work with astrology because it's about you, and the outer reflections are hints about you, but the real work, the real assembly is done by you. And one of the most potent and useful ways to set yourself forward is to get into the experience of defining a question and then holding the question in mind as you read, as you listen. Perhaps you'll go after another reading. Maybe you'll listen to last year's Taurus reading. They're all there on this page, along with other readings. And if you are conscious about your question, it will ring the bell when you find a thing that you're looking for, but don't be satisfied with that. The real beauty of astrology is when you put together the astrological information with a synthesis that is yours and completely original. That's the moment of astrology. The last thing I want to mention is the fact that Pluto has reached the very top of your chart. Now, this chart has Taurus rising. And the midheaven's in Capricorn, the official 10th cusp. But here's the actual kind of entry into Aquarius. And there is Pluto at 2 degrees of Aquarius. This is the 10th place, and it's the place of action, or praxis, from Greek, P-R-A-X-I-S. And we've talked a lot about the inner and the outer in this reading. And Pluto is very much pointing to a set of outer expressions, a sense of leadership, a sense of self-leadership, a sense of what is your mission in society right now in the completely bizarre state that it is in. And Pluto is describing a scenario where you have more worldly responsibility than perhaps you are interested in having, and yet there's no getting around it. Kate Bush has a song, How to Be Invisible. Let's pull up those words. The thing is that you really don't want to be invisible. That's not the thing that's going to help you. The thing that will help you is learning how to be visible. How to be, come on, type up too. How to be invisible. Kate Bush. Let's see what she says here. Hold on. Kate Bush lyrics. She may have taken this. Kate Bush, if you haven't discovered the magnificence and the sheer joy of Kate Bush, I suggest the album to start with is called Ariel. Ariel. Just Google it, it'll come up. It's a 2-CD set. I found a book on how to be invisible. Take a pinch of keyhole and fold yourself up. You cut along the dotted lines. You think inside out, and you're invisible. Eye of Braille. Hem of anorak. I don't know what that means. Stem of wallflower. Hair of doormat. I found a book on how to be invisible. On the edge of a labyrinth. Under a veil you must never lift. Pages you must never turn. In the labyrinth, you stand in front of a million doors, and each one holds a million more. Corridors that lead to the world of the invisible. Corridors that twist and turn. Corridors that blister and burn. Eye of Braille, hem of anorak, stem of wallflower, hair of doormat. Is that the wind from the Desert Song? Is that an autumn leaf falling? Or is that you walking home? Is that the wind from the Desert Song? Is that an autumn leaf falling? Or is that you walking home? Is that a storm in the swimming pool? You take a pinch of keyhole and fold yourself up. You cut along the dotted line. You think inside out. You jump round 3 times. You jump into the mirror. And you're invisible. You're probably pretty nice to look at, so it's not that easy to be invisible, but you might feel invisible. And to have Aries and all this in the 12th is to suggest that the deep, true inner you is a kind of invisible, but that deep, true inner you wants to not be invisible. And so maybe you can write a poem, an answer to Kate or to yourself, how to be visible. I might try that. With Pluto being where it is, going to be there for 20 years, you will be visible. And there seems to be no way of getting around that ultimately the truth of who you are not only will be known, but is already known to everyone and everything, perhaps least of all to yourself. So we could say this is really about how to see yourself. Okay, I will leave it there. Thank you. Happy birthday, if belated, if early, if today, happy Beltane, the most magnificent of the holidays. It's a good one to ritually make contact with someone specifically for the purpose of making contact with someone on Beltane. You know what I mean? All right. Lots of love. And bye for now.